Nicole Brandon, and welcome to Unlimited Life. I am so excited and so thrilled for today's guest. Today we are talking with certainly one of the most talented people that I have ever met and one of my very favorite people on the planet. Today we are talking with Christopher Carruthers. And we talk often on this show about what it's like to live your dreams and your gifts and your talents. And Christopher Carruthers has certainly lived a life living his dreams and his visions and his gifts and his talents. The first time I saw Chris, he was performing in a show that I'm sure you're familiar with called Les Miserables. Chris has done so many shows I've fallen in love with. He was in The Scarlet Pimpernel. He was in When Pigs Fly and Grease and Jesus Christ Superstar, A Little Night Music. He has been in film and television and commercials. And there are very few people in the world that I've ever been a fan of. I always just admire talent, and I sort of come nose to nose and toe to toe with talent, and I've always equated this to somebody's living their gifts and I'm living mine. But I can honestly say, since the very first time that I heard Chris sing and I've watched him act, I've been a huge fan. And so today he's coming on, he's going to talk to us about his career, which is just amazing, and race to see him perform in shows. But we're also going to be talking about his father, A.J. Carruthers. And A.J. Carruthers really was a legend. A.J. was an American playwright, he was a television writer, and he was best known for his work with Walt Disney, who was a very close friend of his. And A.J. wrote, we're going to talk about his movies and his television credit, but certainly movies that you know, The Secret of My Success, Hero at Large, Never a Dull Moment, The Happiest Millionaire, A Meal and the Detective, The Miracle on the White Stallions, which was also known as The Flight of the White Stallions in the UK, and on television, oh my goodness, all of his Disneyland specials, The Thief of Baghdad and Goldilocks and The Nanny and the Professor and My Three Sons, which I love because A.J. had three sons, The Bourbon Street Beat, The Third Man, Studio One, and on and on. And he actually wrote a musical, which is coming out this month. And I really know that this show is just groundbreaking. And so Chris has been generous enough to spare his time from his incredibly busy career to talk to us today about his work and also about the work of his father, his very talented, gifted, amazing father, A.J. Carruthers, who truly led the way for leading an unlimited life. Chris, welcome to the show. It is such a joy having you on today.
Thank you for having me.
Wow. So you know I am a fan. I am such, I mean, as much as I've traveled around the world, and you know I'm constantly in flight, I have really made a concerted effort to be anywhere that you are performing, right?
And I appreciate that.
I just absolutely love your work. So I really want to talk about your dad. But first I want to talk a little bit about you, if you don't mind, because I know that one would think growing up in the entertainment business that we watch now all these movie stars and celebrities and their kids are in the movies, but that really wasn't your path when you were a child. You weren't a child performer, right?
Oh, no, not at all. I didn't even think about getting on stage until I was 17. I certainly didn't consider doing it as a career until I was about 24.
So what was it like growing up in a household? So talk a little bit about your childhood. Your dad worked for Disney. What was that like?
Well, there are a lot of things that I wish I'd been more aware of had I been a little older, but of course I was a kid. The best thing for me about my dad working at Disney was we got to go to Disneyland and not have to wait in line. But I have memories of Walt Disney. The funny thing is, in my memory, and of course I know what he looked like. Everyone knows what he looked like from the television show stuff. But my memory of Walt Disney is that he was very tall because I was very short at the time that I knew him. But he was a wonderful man.
Wow.
I know. My memory is very tall, and this very tall old man, and then I see the pictures of him on television. I'm like, he wasn't tall. He wasn't old. But when you're a kid, most adults look tall and old.
Oh, that's hysterical. That's so funny. And how did your dad hook up with Disney? And how did, do you know how your dad started writing and pursuing the dreams and the visions that he had?
Unlike myself, my father was always a writer. He wrote his first story, which is a murder mystery, when he was 9 years old, and he sold it to a classmate for 15 cents. He was a professional writer from the age of nine.
Wow.
He went to UCLA to study writing. When he was in the Army, after he got out of UCLA, he helped create the first television station in the Caribbean while he was stationed in Panama, and he worked on that station and produced shows there. And then when he got back after the service, he went to work almost immediately for CBS. He was a story editor for Studio One and a producer on Playhouse 90 and GE Theater, and he wrote episodes for them and also for the DuPont Show with Jim Allison, and as you said, at that point, he wrote episodes for My Three Sons and then had them. So he started.
So he wrote the episodes before he actually had the three sons?
Yes, he did. it was a case of life imitating art.
That's so funny. I always thought he wrote that off of the three of you. That's hysterical. That's great.
No. He actually did not have three sons when he started writing those episodes. But I guess it gave him the idea.
That's so funny. Did he read you bedtime stories, or did he share his favorite authors? Because I know you love to read. And was that inspired by your father?
He did read to us, but in retrospect, I think maybe even a bigger influence was the fact that he used to sing to us at night. And perhaps that's where my love of singing came, because I can certainly, some of my earliest memories are of my father singing to me. Although, as I said, I myself was something of a late bloomer when it comes to that.
Mm. So when your father was writing, how did he start working for Disney, and because he wrote a couple musicals, didn't he?
He was a writer in town. He was doing a lot of TV, and it was through that Walt Disney noticed him, came to Walt's attention. So we hired him for a feature assignment called The Miracle of White Snow, his first film he did for Disney. And once he had hired him for that and started working with him and they had a good rapport, he just put him under contract as a writer. So he stayed with Walt from that point until Walt died, and even stayed with Disney for some time after Walt's death. So it was really through his work on Playhouse 90, I believe, that Walt first noticed this young writer named A.J. Carruthers.
That's amazing.
It's very happy at Disney.
And I remember reading
that
Walt's sister was a very close friend of your father's. Or his daughter?
And his daughter, Diane, yes. Yeah, Diane was a friend. Your dad spoke at Walt's funeral. He's featured up in the Disney Family Museum up in San Francisco. It's funny. I just watched for the first time in a while The Jungle Book on DVD, and there's a little speech by Diane Disney at the top of it. A little speech talking about the Disney Family Museum, which I guess at the time they offered the DVD had just recently opened, so it was like a little plug for come up to San Francisco and see the museum. So it was nice to see her face again and hear her voice, because it'd been a while.
Mm, that's so lovely. And I also, one of the things that I admired so much, I mean, your father's career was so diverse, but he wrote speeches for Nancy Reagan and John Ritter and Patrick Stewart and John Lithgow, and he wrote scripts for the Music Center Awards, and I seem to remember reading somewhere that he was named Father of the Year.
Yes.
By the Los Angeles Times, is that true?
LA Times, yes, the LA Times named him Father of the Year, and there are some very funny pictures from that of the family, and my brothers and I were all in matching. I think I was about 7 years old, and my younger brother was five. Yeah, they came out to the house, did a whole big photo spread, and I've still got it in a scrapbook. But, yeah, Father of the Year. And he was
That's
a terrific father. He was always very supportive and patient and funny. And he left us with all these wonderful works. In addition to the films and the TV shows we talked about, he created the TV show Nanny the Professor, which many of the listeners out there who are of a certain age will have grown up with, as I did. He created those characters and wrote a lot of the episodes, and then he went on a number of years later to write a TV series called Goodnight Beantown, which starred Bill Bixby and Mary Hartley, about a pair of battling news anchors in Boston. And he also wrote, as you say, he wrote The Happiest Millionaire, which he did as a film for Disney, was a musical starring Frederick Murray and Tommy Steele, and it was the first screen appearance of Leslie Ann Warren. She made her film debut in that. John Davidson was introduced in that film. A lot of people that went on to very long careers sort of first appeared in that film. And that was when he first worked with Dick and Bob Sherman, the Sherman brothers, who, of course, wrote almost any Disney song you can think of, and then went on with them to write this stage musical, Busk Rally, which, as you mentioned at the top, is going to be produced on August 17th. And it's a wonderful musical. It's based on a film that had starred Charles Laughton and Vivian Leigh called St. Martin's Lane, which was actually sort of a Cockney film variation on The Blue Angel, the Marlene Dietrich film, and is indeed the film that that got Vivian Leigh the part in Gone with the Wind, when they saw that film. Anyway, my dad had been a big fan of the film, and he and the Shermans got the rights to it and wrote this charming musical called Busker Alley, which is set in London in 1939, so it's the eve of World War II, about Charlie, this sort of king of the street performers, they're called buskers in London, who meets this young street urchin and teaches her how to busk and ultimately falls in love with her. And it's the story of them and the story of London just before World War II, and in a way a story about World War II itself, or at least the courage and determination of the British during that very difficult period. So it's a show that's had a long history. As I said, my dad and the Shermans first got together and got the rights and started working on this idea when they were still working at Disney. So that was some 40 years ago, and it was originally called Piccadilly, and they started as a film and then came up the idea of changing it to from a film musical to a live stage Broadway musical. And it had had a earlier life of the national tour starring Tommy Toon, who unfortunately was injured just before the show went to New York and was unable to continue, and so the show never made it to Broadway because they lost their star. But we did have a production of it in New York at the York Theatre Company, and now this is going to be the West Coast premiere, and I'm hoping it's going to lead to a longer run and a way of introducing this charming show to a wide audience of people who I think will love it. It's a great story about love and determination and, you know, what it takes to, in a sense, find yourself and live your own unlimited life, to use the title of your show.
That's great. So where is the show premiering here, and how do people get tickets, and how do they find it?
Sure. It's being produced by a company called Musical Theater West, which is based in Long Beach. It's part of their Reiner Reading series, and it's going to be done one night only, Sunday, August 17th, the University Theater, which is on the campus of Cal State Long Beach. And if they want to find out more about getting tickets, they should go to the Musical Theater West website, which is musical.org, so www.musical.org. And you can find all the information about the reading. You can purchase tickets online through that. Or I guess they can always call the box office, which is area code for all of you who have your pens and pencils out, Area code 562-856-1999, extension 4. And it's going to be a wonderful night. I'm happy to say that I'm also appearing in the show myself in one of the roles. A matinee
so
idol who's very full of himself.
So not to miss. I'm sorry, you're playing a matinee idol?
I'm playing a matinee idol named Victor Ducasey. He's very good looking, and he sings wonderfully, and he's terribly full of himself. He knows exactly how talented he is. So it's a fun character to play. One of those very large ego type characters.
I'm sure the show is going to be amazing. I can't wait to see it. And I love that you are performing in a piece that your father wrote. And I love that your lives are crossing in such a tremendous way. And your father was from Houston, if I seem to remember correctly. And I know that you have been teaching master classes in Texas. So what's it like to go back to the birthplace of your father and to bring music and theater and art to a city and a state and stepping into the legend of your father?
Well, it's wonderful. I like Houston a lot. I'm my father was born in Houston and grew up in Houston, and even though he lived for 47 years in Los Angeles, he always considered Houston to be his home. So he's got very, very deep roots there, and I went and visited a lot over the years, and then it's wonderful to go back. He's still the best friends he ever made in his life lived and still do live in Houston, and so anytime I go back, it's always nice to meet them. It's a way of reconnecting with my father. And, yeah, I got to go back to my father's alma mater, Kincaid, and be a visiting artist for a week and teach master classes and help direct a couple of their shows down there, most notably their production of Grease. I was sort of an assistant director for a week on Grease, which is a lot of fun. It's just terrific. It's terrific to have that way of connecting with my father because I could look around and think, well, gee, this is the same things my father saw when he was here studying, and everyone knows him and knows his name down there, and, you know, his writing trophy is still in the trophy case in the main hall outside the principal's office. They now have an award, the A.J. Carruthers Distinguished Writing Award, in his honor down there at the school. So it's just... it's a wonderful way of connecting, and really, in a way, my father's been an inspiration and a push to have me move in different directions. I've been an actor and a singer and sometimes director for many years, but directly because of my father and his legacy, I'm now becoming a producer and a teacher. When I was invited down there to teach by the head of the drama department down there. It was, in a sense, continuing his legacy, because he always made it a point, connections with Kincaid down there, because it was such an important part of his development. And he went down a number of times during his lifetime to talk to the kids and offer to read their stuff, and he did a screenwriting class that he taught. And so when I was down there for his funeral, actually, the head of the theater department came to me and said, listen, I would like you to come and teach at Kincaid, teach acting and singing to our kids as a way of continuing your father's tradition of teaching. And I had not really thought that much about teaching until then, but it opened up sort of this whole new avenue of expression for me. And since then, I've taught there. I've taught a number of classes around the country. I teach here at the, I've been a guest lecturer at the UCLA Performing Arts Camp, the U.S. Arts Camp that they have at UCLA every summer. And it's a wonderful new adventure for me, teaching, in which I can contribute directly to my father. And producing, as I said, Busker Alley has been a project I've been very passionate about. And I'm very happy that we've gotten this production together and that it's going to happen on August 17th. He also has a straight play, not a musical, called Two Can Play, that I'm looking to get produced locally. They've had very successful productions at the Barter Theater, the State Theater of Virginia, and at the New Theater in Wisconsin. I had to pull that state out of my head. So Tukin Plays is wonderful. He's also, you know, he had written over the years a number of really charming Christmas stories just for the season as part of a benefit fundraiser for his church. And those are now available for production through Samuel French. It's called A Christmas Pudding, 1 and 2. They're evenings of poems and songs and stories written by my father, put together by David Burney. And those are licensed through Samuel French. So if anyone out there wants to do a charming Christmas show, look up A Christmas Pudding 1 or 2 on the Samuel French website. And my father's work is represented there as well. So now I'm kind of, in addition, of course, to my acting and singing and directing career and moving into these other avenues of teaching and producing, and it's really because of my father.
I had the opportunity to watch A Christmas Pudding, and I was blown away. First, my heart was so full, and I remember sitting there thinking, I wonder what it would be like to have a father that wrote like that and had a mind like that and could share whimsical stories and could share enchantment and could share magic and can share simplicity in such a beautiful way that it could touch every heart and every life. And I love the fact that your father touched so many ages. You and I had a conversation about, would watch your father's work, and families would watch your father's work, and elderly people, and men and women in different cultures and countries, and his words seemed to transcend humanity. And I think Christmas Pudding is such a great example of that.
Yeah, it's true, Rick. My father had a wonderful light comedic touch. He wrote a lot of romantic comedy, which I think appeals to all ages, because love and all the problems with love is something that almost everyone, at whatever their age, can relate to. So he always had a real talent for connecting with all different age groups. And and the stuff then that he wrote for The Christmas Pudding was even, because of the season and the venue, some of his more spiritual work and philosophical work, and he brings up some really interesting points that very much touch the heart and also make you think about, you know, what it is to be human and in this world and doing the best that we can all the time. All of his stories are written, the protagonist in his stories is a boy of about 8 years old. And they are, in a sense, autobiographical. They're set in usually in a small southern town. But they, all the stories are just, they're so charming, they're so touching, and even a little mysterious while being funny. So it's just, you know, obviously the, you know, all the stuff he did for Nanny the Professor touched on those themes of growing up and either being a kid or being a parent and all those family relationships that, again, you can relate to whether you're a kid or a parent, regardless of, you know, which side of that equation you have me on, there's always something to laugh at. So he was great at writing stuff that really everyone can enjoy.
And now when I talk about being able to perform or to touch hearts and lives from the young to the old, you've done the very same thing. I look at your resume and I think about Les Mis, or I think about Scarlet Pimpernel and Grease and Jesus Christ Superstar and A Little Night Music, all these sophisticated. And then there's shows like When Pigs Fly, and what was the show? Was it Pinkalicious or something? It was a kids' musical?
Yeah, Pinkalicious the musical, indeed.
And so, is that the same journey for you, that you're out there performing and producing and directing and teaching from the young to the old? You've taken this thread of how do I reach humanity? And you're doing it with your music and your talent.
Sure. And I think, you know, I think it's a universal human desire to communicate with your fellow man and with as broad a range of those fellow men and women as you can. I've been very lucky in my career to have done as much as I have, and I've played some wonderful roles that have both inspiring roles to the audience and to myself. You know, when I played Don Quixote in Man of La Mancha, it was just a wonderful opportunity for me to go through that journey of Cervantes telling a story in the prison about this man who was on a quest and falls and then is redeemed. It just broke me up every time. It's a terrific show, and you know, when Pigs Fly was a lot of fun. Annie was great fun, and White Christmas, the wonderful Bing Crosby movie that they turned into a stage play. It was great to be able to actually play in a way Bing Crosby, at least play Bob Wallace, the same role that he played in the film. It's just I consider myself very lucky.
And just recently you were in Legally Blonde and you played a professor.
Yes, the evil unscrupulous law professor on Legally Blonde, which is another great fun challenge. I don't often get a chance to play the bad guy, so when I do, I really relish it.
That's
and as I said, Ducasey in Busker Alley, the character that I play is a little bit of a bad guy. He's not really evil. Professor Callahan had a touch of evil, but he's just, you know, sort of a, you know, one of those over-the-top, egotistical, self-involved people who's not necessarily nice, but funny.
Well, I so look forward to seeing it. I really do. And I'd love to go back to the top of the show when you were talking about Walt Disney was a very tall man and very old and very
yeah.
tall.
When you're a little kid, yes.
When you're a little kid. And the fact that this was, I mean, usually when I'm interviewing people on the show and I ask them when you were 5 and 6 and 7, when people want to be firemen and astronauts and the president and Miss America, like I did whatever that is, did you know? And you're saying you were 17, so what clicked? What changed that all of a sudden this filled your heart and you knew this would be your dream in your life?
Well, you know, the reason I auditioned for the first show that I ever auditioned for when I was 17 in high school was because I wanted to go to the cast parties. Not the most noble aim, but I had had a couple of friends. The high school that I went to did a big musical every spring, and they did five or six performances over the course of a couple of weekends. And after every performance, because it was high school and there were very few performances, there was a big cast party. And my first year in high school, when I was 16, I had some friends who were in the musical, and so I went to see the show, and afterwards they said, come to the cast party. So I did, and it was a great party, all these kind of fun, crazy people having wonderful times. So the next spring, when I saw the notice that they were having auditions for the spring musical, I thought to myself, well, if I'm in the musical, I can go to all the cast parties. And that's why I auditioned. But
that's great. I never knew that.
Hardly the most noble of motivations. But what happened was once I got cast and involved in rehearsals and became a part of that process, which I had never been involved with before, even though I'd grown up around show business and knew a whole lot of actors and directors and people who were, you know, professionals working in Hollywood. I had never, as I said, it had never occurred to me to do it myself. So now for the first time, I was in that environment with a group of people, learning the material and working on it, and I just found that this is just such an exciting whole world that I never experienced before. It was actually just doing that show that touched something in me that made me realize I want to do this more. And so I started then doing the shows in high school and in college, and when I was 20. 21 years old, I started taking some voice classes for the first time, and things just sort of gradually built from that first point when I was 17 years old on stage going, wow, this is something special, which again, I found only because of the sort of the most mundane, if you will, motivations of wanting to go to parties. But it all worked out.
I love that. And then as you started to perform, what was your father's reaction that you were going into the entertainment business?
My father was always very supportive of me and very supportive of my talent. So I was grateful for that. I think he was a little worried for me because he knew, and as I knew myself, kind of growing up around Hollywood, that it's such a difficult path to choose, and an enormous amount of what determines one's success or lack thereof in this business has not that much to do with you yourself by yourself. It's all a question of timing, of being in the right place at the right time. Of course, once a door is open for you, it's up to you to have the tools to be able to, you know, step through and continue. But there's so much luck involved in this business that I think my father was worried. He had been very lucky in his career, and I'm happy to say that I've been lucky in mine. But when I was 24 years old, neither one of us knew what was going to happen. But he was supportive, and my mother said to me at one point when I was struggling with this idea of do I actually make the commitment to try to become a professional actor. As I said, I was 24 years old. I'd been performing a lot, actually, when I look back on it, since I was 17. But I never thought I'd do it as a career. And my mom said to me, although it sounds like a cliche, she said, I said, listen, you don't want to, I don't think, reach a point late in your life and look back and wonder what if. So I think you should really give it a try. And that was the kind of the final push that I needed, actually came from my mom saying, you don't want to have regrets. So I made the leap, and I've had very few regrets. So thanks to mom, too. Moms are important as well.
Oh, and your mom's incredible. I love your mother. I mean, and your mother, and as she's one of the most beautiful people I've ever seen in my life. I mean, your mother's just astonishingly gorgeous. But even more important, she has such a beautiful heart. She's so warm, and she's so loving, and she's so kind, and she's so good, and she does so much, you know, good for her community. And I know how supportive she was for your father as well.
Oh,
and,
absolutely.
Yes, so I know that a big part of his career and his success came from having that support from her. So, really incredible.
Yeah,
and then
absolutely.
You have two brothers. Were they singing with you as well, or was this, now that I know that My Three Sons was not before your father wrote it, it was the manifestation of having three sons, and then he did, and then there was you.
I have two brothers. I have a younger brother who's a couple years younger than I am, and I have an identical twin brother who's 3 minutes older than I am. And Cameron, my twin, sings, not professionally, but he sings in his church choir. He actually married his choir director. That's how they met. So he sings. My younger brother Andrew, I don't know that I've ever heard him sing. He does many things very well, but I don't think he would ever voluntarily sing in front of people. But he has his own PR firm up in the Bay Area, and he's very successful. He's in his own way, a very talented writer. But I was the only one who sort of went the path of a performer. My twin brother is a professional photographer, a commercial photographer, and so also a very artistic pursuit, but not a performer on stage.
And then I'm going to spread the wings just a little here. As we're talking about artistic pursuits, you paint. And not only do you paint, but when you have been on tour, you've done a lot of national tours, from what I remember from your resume. You've actually been painting in other cities and states and leaving your art behind, as well as the vibration of your talent and your music.
It's an interesting thing. I've done quite a few national tours, and we go all over the country, and you play all these different theaters I think I've been in 39 out of the 50 states and 150 cities or so. But a certain percentage, unfortunately it's a relatively small percentage, but a certain percentage of those theaters around the country have a tradition. And I don't know where it started or how it spreads from one to another, because one of the theaters is almost brand new. I think I was one of the first people to do this, but there is a tradition of touring shows, when they come in and play a theater, of painting on the walls in the backstage area. The audience doesn't see it, but backstage, where the dressing rooms are and the hallways and the offices where the other touring companies come through, someone will paint a little mural on the wall, and everyone in the cast and the crew will sign it, and with the name of the production and the date. And it's sort of a souvenir that you leave behind. And it's wonderful to go to these old theaters. The Fox Theater in St. Louis is a huge theater that does this. The Fox in Detroit as well. The Hobby Center in Houston. And it's just wonderful to actually walk around the halls backstage that are covered with art for years and years and years. You can go back and you can see the dates, you can see the show, you can look for familiar names on the wall. It's a wonderful tradition, and when I was touring with the production of Jesus Christ Superstar that I did I was with that show for over 2 years, we came to one of the theaters very early in the tour, which was in San Antonio, and they had that tradition, and there were all these paintings on the wall, and people in the cast said, hey, we should do this. We should paint a mural ourselves and sign it. Why don't we commemorate the Jesus Christ Superstar Tour? Great idea. Who's going to do it? And everyone sort of looked at each other. And I said, well, okay, I'll do it. And that started. And then over the course of the tour, I think I did 13 different murals in different cities and states, from Seattle as far east as New York. And as I said, some of these theaters are old and have dozens of them all over the place. And some of them are relatively new. The theater in Providence, Rhode Island had just been remodeled, and they had a brand new backstage area because they knocked the old one out and remodeled. And someone said, hey, mine was the first. So it was just a lot of fun. And over the course of doing these murals for a couple of years, I grew myself as an artistically just as a painter. And then since the tour closed, I've gone on, and now I paint on canvases instead of backstage cinder block. But painting has now become a part of my life. I'm actually calling you from my little painting studio, surrounded by a dozen or so of my works, some of which are in various stages of completion. I'm looking at a picture of you, as a matter of fact.
Well, I so look forward to seeing that, but you're so talented. And I was looking at one of, I guess, your Facebook page, or one of your pictures recently had some of your paintings on there.
Oh, yeah, I got some paintings. I had some paintings up on my Facebook page.
So if you want to see Christopher's work, go to his Facebook page, because you really, I mean, you have so much talent. You really do, and I know your father would be so very proud of all that you are doing, and especially that you're going to be in this musical, you know, that he created. And then I wanted to ask you about your wife, if I can, because I know you came onto my television show, and we were talking about relationships. And you, as you're saying, for 2 years you were with Jesus Christ Superstar, and I know that Guinness is looking for you, because I think you've done more national tours than anybody I know. How many times have you done Greece?
You mean how many performances?
How many productions?
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, how many productions? You've done a lot of touring.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I toured with Grease. I've probably done more productions of Grease than any other show because I actually did two different national tours of that show or in two different roles. I went out and did the show as Eugene the Nerd for a while and then left that tour and then went back, I guess, about 2 years later and played the role of Kinnicky. One of the greasers who sings Grease Lightning for a while as well. So I'm very familiar with Grease.
Yes. So, but you've been on tour with all of these shows. You've been away from home so very much. You've had from film to television to musicals, leading ladies, and all of these stages. And yet, your favorite partner in singing is your wife. And so I know that Danielle is an astonishing singer. There are singers and great singers and amazing singers, and then there are fierce singers, and Danielle is, right, a fierce singer. What is it like
Absolutely.
To sing with your wife, and do you fall in love each and every time that you sing? I mean, do you meet somewhere in that musical space of vibrational love? Because I've watched you sing, and it's like nothing I've ever seen when the two of you are singing together.
Yeah, it's a wonderful experience. It's the most emotional connection I think I've ever had with another singer is with her, and that has never changed for 22 years that we've been together. She's still my favorite singing partner, and there's always a very strong emotional connection when we sing together, and has been from the beginning. But she's so talented herself, it's hard not to be sort of picked up and carried by her talent anytime you're around her.
Mm. You know, as we talk about the support of your mom, I know that you have all the support from Danielle, yes.
Well, it's wonderful to have a partner who really understands what you go through because she's been there herself. She's all too familiar herself with the vicissitudes of our business and the frustrations that go along with you know, good shows or bad shows or not getting something you really wanted to or thinking you're going to get something and being disappointed. And it's terrific not to have to explain that to someone that's if they're on the outside. There are lots of relationships of performers with non-performers, and I'm sure they work wonderfully well, but I don't know that I could have had a successful relationship with someone who didn't really understand what it's like to be sort of in the trenches, if you will. So she's been a wonderful support for me. And she's, you know, she's wonderfully talented herself. She just shot a film last week, and next week she's going to be doing a part on this new Viola Davis TV series called How to Get Away with Murder, I think it's called. It's going to be on ABC, so she's going to shoot that next week. So she's a wonderful, talented, successful actress and singer in her own right. So I'm a big fan of hers.
Yes, well, I'm a fan of both of yours. I really am. And I'm so thrilled for Busker Alley and for your father's work getting out there. And so people that want to support your father's writing, your father's work, be able to invest in the musicals or even be able to bring his plays, his shows to their hometown, to their theaters, how do people go about doing that?
Well, certainly the first thing they can do is come and see Busker Alley on Sunday night, August 17th at 7 o'clock. But also, as I said, anyone who wants to do a Christmas show can go to Samuel French and look at A Christmas Pudding. There are two versions of it because it was a show that was done every year. They still do it every year. And David Burney puts it together, and it's always a different show. There's always a different collection of poems and songs and stories and two versions of it, both of which feature short stories of my father's, are available for license on Samuel French. If you want to get in touch with me, if you're interested in Busker Alley or his straight play called Two Can Play, Anyone can reach me at my website, www.christophercarruthers.com, and send me a note, and I'll be happy to respond. As I said,
and also for your teaching as well, if somebody's interested in you coming to the university or to their school and
sure.
to teach, right? And spell Carruthers for us so everybody makes sure that they have it correctly.
Indeed. It is C-A-R-O-T-H-E-R-S. So the thing you drive, and then those people that aren't you, Carruthers.
That's a great way to do it. And I know as you were sharing the spirit of your mother, which is so powerful and so strong, and she's just such a radiant light. And I love the fact that your mother now has an opportunity to see your father's shows come to fruition, and the fact that she embraced your vision of your future and told you to step into it boldly. And what advice would you give to people that are listening to this show, like your father who decided to write when he was a kid and had a talent, or yourself from going to a party, fell in love with a song or a craft? What would you advise people that have a dream or a vision or a song in their heart but don't know how to take that next step to make it a reality?
Well, I think the most important thing, and the only important thing, is just taking that step. There is always an enormous amount of fear around any decision to move into some area that is unknown to you. But if it's something that one has a passion for or connection with, by all means, explore it. You take a class, go to the library, check out a book. Doesn't cost you anything. You do some reading, look up things online, find opportunities. Again, if you want to sing or act, there are community productions, I would think, in every city and town around the country that you can get involved with. One of the things about the Internet is that it is indeed a terrific reference source. It's not just for funny cat videos. So I advise anyone to Google it. and the most important thing is to take that first step, to decide that you're going to not dream about this new path, be it singing, acting, writing, painting, whatever it is, but actually just take a step. And act, and then see where that takes you. I have, with your permission, I will actually quote my father.
Yes.
This is a line from his film, The Happiest Millionaire, which was, it's based on a biography, an autobiography called My Philadelphia Father, written by Cordelia Drexel Biddle, her father was the Biddle of Biddle Jewelry, and she grew up in Philadelphia with this very wealthy but eccentric father at the turn of the last century. And this is one of the lines from the film The Happiest Millionaire, spoken by the patriarch, played by Fred McMurray. Life is a precious and wonderful thing, but you just can't sit there and let it lap around you. You have to dive into it. You have to taste it. You have to feel it. You have to use it. And the more you use, the more you have. That's the wonder of it.
Wow. What a powerful quote. Thank you for that. And that almost answered my next question, which is, I'm so glad you said that, because my question to you as we're coming near the end of the show is, you're so talented, Chris. I mean, as I said, I am one of the biggest fans, and I know that I just... I'm a minion among the many's, because you have such a huge fan base, because your talent is so enormous as an actor, as a singer, as a performer, as an artist, as a producer, as a director, as a teacher. And so to have such a strong career, such a fruitful career, why now choose to make sure that your father's work continues on? Why is it so important to you that your father's words, as you just shared with us, which now I'm sure we're all reverberating from this incredibly powerful statement you just gave us, that his words continue, that his legacy continue into the future.
Well, because they're wonderful words. Everyone should be familiar with them, should hear them. It's they've certainly been a great inspiration for me throughout my entire life. I want to share that with the rest of the world for as long as I can and in as big a way as I can, because it's just terrific stuff. It inspires me every day, and I think it'd be inspirational for others as well.
Mm-hmm. When he used to sing to you, what would he sing?
He would sing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, I remember. He would sing, earliest thing I remember him singing is a nursery rhyme called Bye Baby Bunting.
Mm.
And I must have been 3 years old, but it's the earliest I can remember him singing that to me, being rocked in the rocking chair at nighttime. So that was a favorite. He would sing Fee It of Fitties, Three Little Fishes. He'd sing, novelty songs from the 40s, Mersey Doats and Dozy Doats. Things that I thought were hysterical when I was a kid.
Mm. So. I love that. And do you have one favorite moment or memory of being with your dad?
Oh, gosh. There are so many. I don't know if I can pick out just one. I do know the time he sang Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star when we were outside looking up at the stars was a memory that I cherish. Some balmy night in Encino, California. Probably summertime, and I was 4 years old. And hearing him perform his own work in not only did he write these short stories, he would read them himself, and he was a wonderfully talented reader. He had done acting himself earlier in his life, even as he was writing, and I think I got whatever instincts I have as an actor and even my, my pipes, as we say, as a singer, I got from my dad. My dad was a terrific singer and a great interpreter of words, especially his own. So hearing him read his own stories is a memory I'll always cherish.
I think that's beautiful. And I am so pleased that Busker Alley is coming to life and that everybody has an opportunity not only to see this amazing show, but to see you perform as part of that show and to witness your talent, your enormous, enormous talent as part of your father's legacy and as part of your father's talent and gift, and that journey and that bridge continues on. And so I'm so grateful that you are here today and able to share the remarkable life and love and talent and body of work of your father, A.J. Carruthers, and the amazing gift and talent that you embody and share now with the world. And I so look forward to continuing to come to your performances and raise my banner and my flag. And for everybody
thank you very much.
That's listening, of course, these are shows not to be missed. And as Chris was sharing with you, step into your visions and dreams, that everywhere in every city and every town is an opportunity for you. And how grateful the entire world is, Chris, that you wanted to go to a party. We should write a thank you letter to these people that were having these wonderful cast parties and say thank you so much. What a great lure for Christopher Carruthers, his enormous talent, and that you now share it with us, and that the murals that you've created, a piece of you and your artwork behind on the walls of these theater as a mark of the talent, the joy you brought to these cities and towns. Just incredible. So
thank you
for being with us. And I always ask at the end of the show for a definition. And is there a way that you can define, I guess, I want to say music, but even more so, define your father's talent. Is there a definition, a word, or two words that you would say wrap up or embody the creation of your father?
Wow. There is a challenge. Remember, my father was the writer, not I. I would have to say, if I could use two words to define my father's, as a writer, as a contributor to the human experience, I would say more than anything else, more than the humor and the insight, I think I would sum him up with the words elegance and romance.
Mm.
And his writings, even his life, prove never go out of style.
Mm. Well, I think that's perfect. Elegance and romance certainly defines the greatness and the tremendous talent of A.J. Carruthers. And magical talent certainly defines yours. So we so look forward to seeing you perform. I look forward to Busker Alley. I thank you so much for being with us today. And
well, thank you very much for having me.
We certainly look forward to having you back on, and I expect to everybody that's in the United States and those of you that are in other countries, fly in, see Busker Alley, and absolutely catch Chris all over performing. And when you do go backstage, let him know that you listened to the show and that he inspired you to step into your visions and dreams. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you very much, Nicole.
Thank you. What an amazing guest. And A.J. Carruthers, oh my word, how talented. From film to television to speech writing to the Christmas pudding to the musicals to winning Father of the Year. I love that Chris's memory as a child was looking at the stars and his father singing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. But that's something that's carved and etched in who he is, and that his talent now is bridging not only in his own tremendous talent, but he's also carrying forth the torch of his father's talent into future generations, and that his father's words are so beautiful. Wasn't that incredible, what he shared? Absolutely incredible. I think I'm going to play that over and over again and write that down and put that on my desk, because truly, that's inspiration at its pinnacle and success, the very tippy top of what we know to be joy and love and humanity. So I thank Christopher Carruthers for being with us today. Next week, we have an incredible show. We are learning how to read the palm of your hand. You can listen and learn all about your life and your future by being on the show. You can call in, or you can go to the website and have an imprint done, send it in before the show, and we can even do a live reading on stage. The guest that we have coming on is so incredible. She actually came to my house and did one for me, and I can tell you, I learned things about myself that I didn't even know was possible for someone to see, to know things that lived within my heart very deep inside that she was able to bring to the table. And so I'm thrilled for next week's show. So come join us for that. And great thanks for Christopher Carruthers sharing the enormous gift and talent of A.J. Carruthers, and I look forward to meeting you at Busker Alley. This is Nicole Brandon and Christopher Carruthers wishing you an unlimited life.